So hello everybody, I'm Fabian from the Friendly Anarchist and I'm here with Srini from Blockcast FM and the School of Life. And I'd like to talk to him a bit about his workday in this At Work interview. So first of all, hi Srini, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, Fabian.
So to get started, what is the kind of work that you do? Like, how many different areas of focus do you have?
Well, I have two primary areas of focus. I'm, as most people know who are prolific bloggers, I'm the host and co-founder of Blogcast FM, a show where I interview business experts, bloggers, best-selling authors, and successful entrepreneurs. And over the last year, the last 2 years, actually, I've interviewed over 200 people. So that's one thing that I focus on. And then my other project is my personal blog. It's called The School of Life, where I write about the things you should have learned in school but never did, that being the main theme, but really the underlying premise of all of it is really self-help, personal development. So that lends itself to being able to write about a lot of different things.
So basically, your main work during the day is connecting with more people, interacting with them, and then, of course, the actual creation of the interviews and writing blog posts.
Yeah, I would say it's a combination of connecting with people and creating. But I think that's actually an interesting observation because I'm trying to, believe it or not, spend less time connecting and more on the creating. And it's a kind of weird balancing act for somebody like me because the nature of my platform is that it's completely dependent on connecting with people.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I recently interviewed Chris Guillebeau and I asked him, I said, you know, Chris, what is a secret to somebody who achieves so much in 3 years? Like, why would somebody like Chris Guillebeau achieve what he has in 3 years when there are plenty of other people who started at the same time he did but have never achieved near the level of success? And he said he spends 50% of his time connecting, 50% creating. And I would say that that actually is a pretty solid balance. And I think anybody can achieve that, even me. And that's what I've been sort of aiming for, is to spend less time on the high impact activity or low impact activities. And we can even talk about that if you want. But it kind of got me thinking about, you know, how I do spend my time. So, yeah, I would say it's a combination of creating and connecting. And connecting is just a necessity for me. Like, it's my entire online presence is fueled by connecting, especially Blogcast FM, because I'm constantly on the lookout for new guests.
Absolutely. Cool. So if we look into your specific workday, let's say, do you have any specific time at which you normally get up? Do you use an alarm clock or do you just, like, sleep in until you're well rested?
It's funny, I don't even need an alarm clock anymore because as anybody who knows me knows, I'm an avid surfer, so even if I try to sleep in, it usually doesn't work, which is actually quite irritating at times. But I'm up early, usually by 6, 7 a.m., and I have kind of a routine that I go through in the morning, and it varies. There are days when it doesn't work, but for the most part, my standard routine is cup of coffee, throw on a headphones, and just fingers the keyboard and see what comes out. Okay. And you know, as I've said multiple times, 80% of everything I produce is complete crap. The other 20% is what ends up on my blog.
Yeah, I suppose that's about the ratio most of us get, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think that people have this notion that you have to be perfect. And the thing is, you don't have to publish your really lousy stuff, but it's important to create it because often the things that will evolve into that 20% often the seeds from that come from that 80% of complete crap. Sometimes I'll find something that I'd written months ago and the idea just isn't formulating or isn't coming together. And then suddenly, for some reason, when I go back and look at it, it just kind of hits me like a ton of bricks and I can hammer out a blog post in a half an hour.
Absolutely. And you basically take the same theme, but this time you really manage to create it in a way that's expressing what you initially intended, right?
Right, and that's why I encourage people, even if it means that all you have is the first sentence, just write it down and try. If you can't get any further than that, then move on to something else. Because often those first sentences end up being gems. I mean, even those first sentences sometimes I'll use as quotes to update my Facebook fan page. So, yeah, I think that one of the things you have to think about is as you know, it's great to sort of create without a purpose, but you also kind of want to think about creating with a purpose too, because if you can create things, like I said, you know, you take that sentence and that one sentence by itself, it's semi-useless, but you then take it and it becomes a Facebook status update, right? You could throw it on a picture and now you have something that gets shared. And one of the things that I discovered by just accident was I was taking these, I put together this presentation for SlideShare and it didn't do very well on SlideShare, but I realized that each of the slides could be a separate picture, and I could use each one to basically share something with my Facebook fans. And each one had a quote from my blog from something I'd written, and it had a watermark that said the School of Life blog. And yeah, so something that I had done before that wasn't all that productive ended up being this great thing, and it actually helped me grow my fan base and really engage the people there.
Cool. So you took basically like the presentation from SlideShare and shared it in parts at other places on
exactly.
The web.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, cool. Exactly. And the thing is, that's one example. I think you could do that with anything. I mean, take a list post, you could do the same thing. You know,
absolutely.
You could I think that you kind of have to think about developing content strategically, and that was a mistake that I made in the very early days. And where this came from really was the work I do with my business partner, David. He turned me on to an idea that I think really was eye-opening. He said, you know, you're writing 3 to 5 blog posts a week. He said, why not take one or two of those and repurpose them focus those towards a paid product instead of free? I mean, because let's face it, you know, I mean, as much as it's nice to do free content and give stuff for your readers, I just the profound realization that I had to kind of come to the other day is that you're running a business, not a charity.
Yeah, absolutely. At some point, you need to make some money in order to sustain your life anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So getting back for a moment to the routines, I mean, you said you just grab a coffee and you sit down to write. So you keep your browser closed, you keep your social media applications closed,
so
and you just sit down to write? Or
that's a great question. One of the things that I found, especially as somebody who has an incredibly short attention span, I discovered something called a distraction-free writing tool, and I don't remember who first told me about it, but it's funny because I realized what most people do, especially early-stage writers, when they write, they actually don't focus on the writing. They focus on the formatting and the layout and all this nonsense, which that's all irrelevant, right? Because your goal is to actually write. So I use something called a distraction-free writing tool. So what you get, basically, is just a black screen. It looks like a terminal, from the late 80s or something, or the early 80s, whenever those things were around. And it's just black screen with green text, and I just write. And that, I think, is hands down one of the most valuable things that anybody can do to increase their productivity as a writer.
So that's some application like WriteRoom, or is it actually called?
WriteRoom, the one I use is called MacJournal.
Okay.
There's a few other ones online, but I think WriteRoom and MacJournal are the two big ones.
Yeah.
And because here's the thing, right? If you write a blog post in WordPress, the problem with that is that you still have all the bells and whistles of a standard keyboard, or like, you know, you do it in Microsoft Word. It's like there's 1,000 other features that are not really relevant until you're ready to start laying out and doing formatting.
Absolutely. Because
the key is to get the piece written, right? You can always go back and edit. You can always go back and format. But if you don't get it written, you waste time on things like that. It's kind of pointless.
Totally. Yeah, I'm personally a big fan of WriteRoom as well, so I totally can sign that. Do you need any other like rituals in order to find focus? Like, you know, like Stephen Pressfield, he always like takes a moment to say a prayer, like the invocation of the muse, something like that. Or do you just really?
Sure. I will tell you that there's one, and I think everybody knows this. I believe that everybody needs some sort of fuel for their creative fire, and for me, that has been surfing. Usually the most, and this is the irony of it all, right, is that the days that I spend 4 to 5 hours surfing, which you would think would be my least productive days, are the days on which I get the most work done. You know, it's funny to think, hey, I just spent all day at the beach riding waves, but I come back and I usually am in a very different state of mind, I think, just because here's the thing. We live in this world where the flow of information, it doesn't stop. And it's getting worse. And so when you sort of get disconnected and you kind of, you basically slow the mind down, it's interesting. I mean, there's a great book by Jonah Lehrer called Imagine, which just recently came out, which I recommend to anybody who wants to really understand this process of how we sort of become creative.
How is
and
it
I realized,
called? Excuse me?
Imagine by a guy named Jonah Lehrer.
Okay, thanks.
And one of the things that I realized, it turns out that I wasn't alone in this whole experience of having sort of a creative, a fuel for my creative fire. I think you talk to anybody who is a creator of any sort, so for some of them it could be music, but whatever it is, the irony of it is that it's a complete disconnect from whatever it is you're trying to do. Because I don't think when I'm in the water. It's this very sort of mentally quiet and peaceful time.
Absolutely.
And that, to me, is something that everybody should and cultivate as part of their daily rituals. I mean, I always wonder, I can confidently say that the content at the School of Life wouldn't have evolved the way it has without surfing. It definitely has been instrumental in my ability to write.
Cool.
And in the early days, I was really, it was tough because I was so dependent on it. And there are patterns I noticed in my writing. I said, you know, the writing just really went down the tube on the days that I wasn't surfing regularly.
So you sometimes, if the weather conditions allow, you sometimes go surfing before starting to write, or you always write first thing in the morning?
Well, I usually write first thing in the morning, but sometimes I will go surfing before I write, depending on what the surf conditions are like. But it is an integral part of where I go to do some of my best thinking, and the funny thing is I'm not thinking about anything.
Yeah, I personally know that as well, from swimming, traveling around, whatever it is. It's like the same thing. So when it comes to actually sitting down to work, at which place do you normally go? I know you're currently at a coffee shop, so are there any important
right.
things in your work environment, or is it generally coffee shops outside, some other place?
No, I'm the only reason I'm in a coffee shop at the moment is because I'm in New York City, and I just wanted a change of scenery, and there are cute girls at coffee shops, so let's be honest, I'm at the coffee shop. I didn't want to sit around in my friend's apartment where I'm staying. It's just too quiet. But on the flip side of that, I think that it really depends on each person. I think that some people need a stimulus in their environment. And I actually think that staying in one place too long is actually not good for productivity.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that that's the other thing. I think these, you know, marathon work sessions are nonsense. Like, I believe that there's diminishing returns to productivity. And even Tony Schwartz, who runs this huge thing called the Energy Project, has talked about this. He says that, you know, really we should be taking a 15 to 20 minute break every hour, hour and a half. And most people don't do that. They sit for these, you know, sort of marathon sessions. And I found that that rarely works for me, especially
yeah.
with somebody who has a short attention span. I found that I think the key is to working in focused blocks, even if they're short blocks, because you can get a lot done in 45 minutes if you're just singularly focused and you don't multitask, you shut down everything. But you realize that, okay, it's only 45 minutes, so you use a timer or something. And the thing that's nice about those short blocks is they're not grueling the way these sort of marathon work sessions are. So I think that, you know, I think the guys from 37 Signals really nailed it when they said, you know, being a workaholic is treated as some sort of accolade in this culture. And we somehow, it's like a bragging right. People come and brag about how many hours they work. And yet,
yeah.
if you
look
at it,
the earlier you come, the later you go and stuff like that.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that the way we're evolving is what's interesting is that there's very little correlation between how much somebody produces and how many hours they work. I mean, because here's where that, in my mind at least, you know, as I've sort of studied this, because my second most popular blog post is called Why the 8-Hour Workday Doesn't Make Sense, and it's all about how we structure our work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this notion of an 8-hour workday came from the Industrial Revolution, right?
Absolutely.
Because if you thought about it, those days, we said, okay, you know what? The more hours you work, the more widgets we can produce, or whatever the hell it is we're producing. And now we've entered an information era where it's not about the number of things you produce, but about the quality of things and things that have lasting value. And I mean, who cares how long it takes to produce if it gets produced? That's, you know, this misperception of you know, the number of hours relating to the quality of your work is ridiculous. In fact, most people will tell.
Especially also because if you're doing like this writing work, thinking work, much of it happens mm-hmm. in the background, like what you mentioned when you're going to the beach, when you're
Precisely.
Playing in the water. It's when a lot of work happens subconsciously, and later on you only have to like bring it down to paper or onto the screen, right?
And that can happen really fast. It doesn't have to take hours, and that's I think that's something that we need to get over as a society. And you know, here's another just ridiculous example. If you were about to have surgery, would you be comfortable knowing that your doctor has been working for 90 hours that week?
Oh, and normally that's the case, yeah. We wouldn't want to see it this way, but that's what happens, right?
Right, exactly. And so I think that we have to be careful not to really tie productivity and the number of hours into having any correlation.
Totally. So you already mentioned like these short bursts of time that you're working. Do you use something like the Pomodoro technique or fixed agenda, something like that?
Yeah, I guess you could say it is the Pomodoro technique. I mean, I will say, okay, you know what, I'm going to shut down everything, and how long that lasts is beyond me. And I think sometimes it's okay to give in to your need for distraction. I mean, I think if it just becomes an ongoing habit and you find you're getting absolutely nothing done, then you have a problem. But I've noticed that one is that I think that we have this also other need to fill to-do lists. Like, it's funny because people will have a to-do list, and that to-do list is never done. It's the never-ending to-do list, and it's kind of like you're going to take this thing with you to the grave, and there'll still be items left to cross off of it.
And a whole lot of them.
Yeah, and the stupid thing is that actually hurts your productivity, because I came up with this idea the other day. I was thinking, I said, you know, productivity is an animal that feeds itself. And if you basically say, you know what, I've accomplished these 5 things that I set out to do today and leave it at that, then do it again tomorrow and do it again the next day, all of a sudden what you accomplish will be dramatically higher than if you have 100 things on your to-do list and you're constantly adding new ones. Because I think what happens is there's a psychology of accomplishment. Like, you get this sense that, okay, you know what, I've done something, I've been productive, and you feel good about it. And anything you feel good about, you're going to do more of. Whereas if you keep looking at the to-do list and it's just growing constantly, or you keep adding to it, it's going to look like something that will never get done.
Yeah, and I think that's something many freelancers and creative types are struggling with, because it's not like in a factory, again, from the industrial age, where you say, okay, I did my shift 8 hours today and I produced X amount of stuff. But it's like sometimes it's hard to actually measure. But if you have like clearly defined and achievable goals, I think it really gives you this feeling of accomplishment at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, well, not only that, I mean, a lot of what we do as freelancers and whatever we do, a lot of it can be accomplished. I mean, you know, I'll give you an example. I've been contemplating the idea of a full-time job for financial reasons. Mm-hmm. And people are looking at me like I'm out of my mind. And what they don't know is that I could accomplish everything I do right now in about 2 hours every day.
Cool.
And that's because... Well, and you know what it is that we will fill whatever time we're given. So if you have all day to work on something, then you're going to fill all day with a bunch of useless crap, even though it probably doesn't take all day.
Absolutely.
You know, I realize, you know, something, I look at my inbox and I try to check it about twice a day if I can. I mean, sometimes it's bad and I'm checking, but I realized almost everything I could do via email, I could literally handle in about 30 minutes every day. There's really, you know, I always like to say, I'm like, World War III is not going to erupt in your inbox. And if it really did, believe it or not, you'll find out faster than, you know, you need to checking your email. But I think that, you know, as far as your question goes, I do tend to use things kind of like the Pomodoro technique. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, I look at how much do you really get done. And here's the other thing I think that has been a very big lesson for me, and I kind of mentioned this at the beginning, is working on the things that will have the biggest impact, right? Like, what Absolutely. Is going to have an impact longer term? Like, does what you're doing tie to your ultimate goal? And in my favorite example, believe it or not, is as somebody who spends my time on social media scouting new guests for my show, I've been lately saying that this can be just a giant waste of time. Because, and I've just written a blog post about this, about how using social media the wrong way can actually be detrimental to your efforts. Because the shelf life of anything you put out in social media, you could have the most brilliant insight, mm-hmm. and you put it on Twitter or Facebook, it has a shelf life of about an hour.
Yeah.
And that's it. Then it's going to just disappear sort of into the ether. And whereas if you had taken that brilliant insight, expanded it into a blog post, that blog post could be found in your archives. Now, even the blog post itself has a shelf life of maybe a week, even though they might find it in your archives. Now, a book. Now, let's say you take all those blog posts and you put it into something a bit more, you know, like a compilation that is shared on a regular basis or showcased on a regular basis. Well, that has a significantly longer shelf life. Like, you look at the manifestos that people have written, right? You know, people get their manifestos, the thing gets 100,000 downloads. And the example that I'm referring to is Chris Guillebeau's World Domination Manifesto. I mean, he wrote that probably 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it still has stood the test of time, because the thing is, something, a body of work like that has a much longer shelf life. So the thing I think we have to think about is what activities are going to have the greatest impact on where you want to ultimately go. So if your goal is to write a book, well, tweeting about the fact that you want to write a book is not going to help you get the book done any sooner. Maybe if you're getting feedback from the people you're tweeting with on the content of the book. I mean, I will up, you know, what I'll use Facebook for now is I'll post sentences from my book or quotes just to kind of gauge what's the overall response. Are people thinking, okay, this is cool, I like this, or, you know, and kind of gives me some sense of, okay, should I go in the right direction? Should I keep going in this direction or should I change direction? But at the end of the day, even a Facebook update is kind of it doesn't really do much because people don't go to Twitter and Facebook to buy things. They go there to be entertained. And even, you know, I think here's another thing. Self-promotion gets a bad rap, but how the hell are you going to sustain yourself if you don't promote your products? And I think you have to find a balance between promoting the stuff that you'd work on that's paid for and sort of this community and connection piece.
Yeah, and then the other balance that you mentioned is basically think about how you could conserve even the small gems of work that you produce over the day and put them into something that has a longer shelf life that won't get lost so rapidly, right?
Exactly. And I mean, I've given you a very long answer to your question, but I'll sum it up this way. People have to think about content development in a much more strategic manner. And this is, you know, like I said, I can't claim that this is all my own insights. I've been very fortunate in that I've gotten to pick the brains of people much smarter than me for, you know, almost 2.5 years. And what I've gathered and observed is that they're very strategic and intentional about how they develop content. It all has an end, and there's an end goal to all of it. And what you'll see is if you read many of their books, you read, you know, a lot of their ebooks, you'll see the seeds for it. It all started in blog posts, but it was all kind of headed in that direction. So I think that we make bigger projects more complicated than they need to be because we don't break them up into pieces.
So one last question concerning the tools that you use to get things done. You mentioned that you're trying to focus on what has an impact. Do you have lists, apps, agendas, stuff like that, or how do you do that? Or do you more or less decide on it spontaneously? I suppose you have so many scheduled interviews and stuff like that. How do you manage all that?
Well, I actually, you know, it's funny you ask. I recently found a really amazing book by a guy named Scott Belsky called Making Ideas Happen. Mm-hmm. And he had this tool that he developed as part of the Behance or the 99% called the Action Method.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. It was hands down one of the most powerful productivity tools I've came across, because what it allows you to do is separate everything into projects and then have actions for those projects and assign deadlines to them and dates. So you constantly are looking at this screen and you know exactly what you need to do. And I mean, we're talking about everything. So even if I need to schedule interviews, if I'm awaiting confirmation from somebody on getting an interview scheduled, if I need to reply to somebody, all of that is in that thing. And you know, I got to the point where I realized I used it so much within a week that now I have to upgrade to the paid version. So I think that is probably hands down the best productivity tool I've found.
Cool. Perfect. So you also can keep your calendar in it, or?
Yeah, I mean, you can keep your calendar in it, I believe. I mean, you can do some other stuff. I use Google Calendar for just looking at, for maintaining a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I used to use Tungle, which allows you people to just pick, you know, you basically give them a list of dates and they pick.
Yeah, I remember when we did our interview.
And here's the thing, right, is that there's a fine line with that. If you're, because I'm the person asking for the interview, so to say, hey, here's my schedule, you should accommodate it, seems a little bit, I kind of saw it, I was like, okay, as much as this is a huge time saver, it's, I felt as though I was like, it's kind of presumptuous to say, you know what, I'm so important that you should schedule the interview that I want to do with you around me.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to, especially as, you know, I brought bigger and bigger guests on the show, they're busy people. So
absolutely,
as it is, it's very difficult to get them sometimes, or I get, you know, a schedule, a date 6 weeks out. So I have to often take whatever date they give me. But I think that, you know, that's why I use Google Calendar to do everything.
Okay.
And eventually, I think the idea for me is to get away from all of this. And you know, when you get enough revenue coming in, all of this kind of stuff, a lot of this day-to-day nonsense needs to be delegated to somebody else. Somebody else should be handling stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Anything
having a great assistant would be perfect help, right?
Right. And like I said, all the things that don't make a high impact or make a big impact on your business, you shouldn't be spending that much time doing.
Cool. So finally, last question. Do you have anything else that you'd like to share concerning your typical workday or any other productivity advice that's on your mind?
Like I said, I think probably for me, one of the most important things is what we talked about, is having that sort of, you know, sort of fuel for your fire. And the other thing is that I think that what we've done is we're obsessed with productivity, right? And we're so obsessed with productivity that's getting in the way of getting things done.
Absolutely, because we spend so much time like trying to set up lists instead of really working on the stuff that matters.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess if I could conclude it in one way, I would say do the work that actually matters and don't worry about the rest of it, because the rest of it is just mechanics.
Perfect. That's a perfect final statement. Thanks so much, Srini. Really great to have you on this at work interview.
No problem.